Welcome, this is David Crable from Forager, and today I will be speaking with Lisa Kivirist. Lisa and her husband, John Ivanko, are the authors of Homemade for Sale, which is an excellent guide for starting your cottage food business. I like to think of John and Lisa as kind of a triple threat. They are farmers, they're producers, and they are activists and teachers. So not only do they grow their own ingredients, but they produce and sell their preserves from their farm, and they help others do the same. They have written a number of books. Lisa herself has helped write 5 books, and they also travel around the country, participating in a number of speaking gigs. And if that's not enough, they have even started a number of legislative efforts to help improve the laws around the nation. So, Lisa, I'm so glad you could join me today.
Hey, thanks, David.
All right, well, I know that you run a very unique farm in Wisconsin. Can you tell us a little bit about that farm?
Sure. So we run In Serendipity Farm and Bed and Breakfast. We are in southern Wisconsin, about an hour south of Madison towards Illinois. And we run a real diversified operation here, supporting our values of sustainability. So we have a small vegetable production side, and then we run the farm on renewable energy, primarily wind and also some solar power in the mix. And we have a farm stay bed and breakfast on our farm, so folks can come out and experience a shower heated by the sun and also have a super local fresh seasonal breakfast 10 feet from garden to plate.
That's awesome. And I know that you didn't start out that way. You haven't been farmers your whole lives, have you?
No, but it's turning into the majority of our lives. We've been out here 20 years now, but back in the day, way in our 20s, we were doing what my mom still calls the normal phase of our life, where we graduated college with degrees and worked in corporate cubicles in Chicago. And on paper, we're doing everything right and expected, aside from the fact that we just were maybe having an early midlife crisis, but finding no fulfillment in what we were doing. And that was when we moved to the farm. And it was a change on a number of fronts, both wanting to live rural, but more so wanting to live where we wanted to live. And that opportunity that now has really flourished of folks being able to work from anywhere. And also, too, realizing that we were much more entrepreneurial than school and society led us to believe, and that we wanted to call our own shots and set our own schedule and have that freedom that comes with being your own boss.
Yeah, I love that, the whole issue of freedom. And I know that with your books and with your speaking and everything you've been doing, you've certainly struck a chord with the American public. Can you talk a little bit about what got you to jump ship? You know, what got you to move from that corporate lifestyle to this more rural, local, communal one?
Sure. And it's interesting when you think about life changes. Everybody has different sparks. Sometimes they're anything from a life crisis to a health crisis. But for us, it was really that strong urge, if we're not going to do it now, when will we? And that probably reigns common with a lot of folks, in that time goes by and your life goes by. And we were at a stage where, gee, should we invest in a condo in Chicago or 5 acres in a farm in Wisconsin? So that was what got us going. Another part of our philosophy here and approach has always been keeping things both green but lean. So being as debt-free as possible. And that was a stage in our life where we could pay off some student loans and other debts and jump into this entrepreneurial lifestyle debt-free and keep it that way as much as possible as we moved on.
So some people would just get on a farm, increase the quality of their life, and be done with it. But you've taken a big step farther, where you're actually trying to enable people and help other people do this. What do you tell people when they come to you and ask, you know, how can I do what you're doing? How can I step out of my job and start to be my own boss?
Sure. And that's what a lot of our writing has focused on, too, of helping folks make that transition from being employed to being your own boss, or having a hobby to having your own business. And a real first step and this is what I love about cottage food opportunities for folks, is the ability to start small and to start something on the side, to experiment, to try out a couple different ideas on a small scale. I think too often we get caught in that idea that we have to come up with the one big thing and put all our eggs in one basket. But we are all about diversity here on our farm and in our lives, and really modeling Mother Nature. She doesn't plant just one seed or drop just one acorn from the tree. A lot of things are nurtured in nature, and how can we look at our lives and our livelihood like that, and not just do one thing that fits on one business card and you get one paycheck, but nurturing the number of ideas, which really we found helps from the bottom line. Last year, we calculated we had over 1,000 checks received into our business. Now, most of those were real small. Somebody might come for a B&B stay or buy some of my sauerkraut I produce under our cottage food law in Wisconsin. But when you add all that up, there's strength in that diversity. And it's not, again, putting all those eggs in one job basket.
Oh, that's really cool. I hear a lot of people who wonder whether they should drop everything and move into a cottage food operation. You know, should I quit my job and just go full scale? What do you feel about that? Do you feel like people should quit their job and move into a venture full time?
I wouldn't advise that myself. That's the beauty of cottage food is you can start it so easily part time and dabble and get your feet wet or your hands in the mixing bowl and try things out before taking that leap of leaving a full-time job. I think part of the issue is to not let yourself get so frustrated or so caught up in the busy schedule and all these other commitments so that you really are at the end of your rope and you don't see any other options. By reprioritizing things and, yeah, keeping that job, but getting that cookie business going, starting those jams and going to farmers markets on weekends will let you dabble and will let you see where your strengths are if you enjoy this and then start a transition plan. I mean, as you've probably seen with Forager, most cottage food businesses, really, it's not their full source of income. It's a side business. It could be something seasonal. It could be something that you simply enjoy doing and like having a side business. But it's a good element of a diverse business portfolio. That's what we've really found. So if you have a lot of different ideas and maybe you want to do some writing or teaching or you want to move to a farm and start growing something as well as selling your jams and jellies at the market, that's a real way to enhance your bottom line through a cottage food business.
I totally agree. And yet you have left your job. You've moved on. So when did you know that it was the right time?
The clock turned on. It's funny because folks sometimes want a real dramatic answer or, you know, the vision in the middle of the night. But bottom line, it just is realizing when you need to move forward. And for a while, too, we rationalized, well, we could always go back, you know, and that's sometimes a comforting mantra someone can tell themselves when embarking on change is, yeah, I can always go back and get a job. You know, I could always go back and work in a cubicle, but I would never know what for me, the rural farming lifestyle, the being my own boss, the running my own food business out of my home kitchen would be like unless I tried. So there's a lot of different routes to that change. There's a lot of different players in everybody's lives. But the important part, I think, is really not living with regret, and time goes by quickly. So the more opportunities folks can take to start something as a side venture and see if you like it, if it's something you want. Entrepreneurship, I'd be first to say, is not for everybody. There are folks that thrive really well and like that security of a job and a paycheck, and that's great. But if you have inklings that there may be life for you on the other side of the paycheck, then it's definitely something to experiment with.
So as you've done that transition period and become your own boss, I'm sure you faced challenges and new things that you hadn't had to deal with when you were working in an office. What did you have to deal with that you didn't have to deal with before?
Sure. Well, For me, a big transition has been record keeping, in the sense of, if you're working for another business, they do all that for you, right? You just sort of end up with a paycheck in your mail. But particularly for me, it was that idea that, yeah, I could do things that I love doing, and work doesn't have to be something that I just plow through so I will have time and money at the end to do what I want to do. But it was a real blending of work and leisure, and learning to track that. And these are some of the things we go into Homemade for Sale too, to help folks move from being a hobby cookie baker to a cottage food business owner. And that has to do with tracking your expenses, be it your ingredients, be it the miles you drove in your car to go pick up those ingredients or take a class, to anything you do towards marketing, but to just get in that mindset of, what is it that I want to do and what expenses may I have to get there, and to utilize those in your business equation to enhance your bottom line.
Yeah, and that's something that I wanted to ask you about today. I think a lot of people start selling at farmers markets, or they start small, which is what you said they should be doing. But it's hard to move beyond that. It seems more like a hobby and not like a business. Is starting a business a very intentional thing? And what's the difference between a business and a hobby? And what sort of steps do people need to take to move their venture to the next level?
Sure. Well, there's big differences when you start involving the IRS, you know, in that between a business and a hobby is, bottom line, you need to make money in a business. It needs to be profitable. But even then, per IRS standards, that's just 3 out of every 5 years. So it's both a financial equation, but I find too, it is much more so a mindset of treating yourself as a professional, and not, you know, that has everything to do from what you charge to how you handle yourself, to your bookkeeping, et cetera. And that's probably the biggest leap for folks. And again, a good reason to start small, to see, like, is this what you want to do? Is this really where your both heart and mind are at? But to grow a cottage food business, let's say you get started, you start going to market, that's where a lot of creativity comes in. Because on one level, as cottage food entrepreneurs, we don't have to play by the same old business rule book. You know, we don't have bricks and mortar that have rent due at the end of every month. We don't have traditional marketing channels, but we can get creative in outreach. We can get creative in what we produce. That's another point that's real important with cottage food startups, is you're not investing in your startup. Most cottage food entrepreneur wannabes have just about everything they need to get started in their home kitchen, because you're probably making this stuff already. So you're not investing anything to get started. And the product you're producing is on a small scale. So you don't have 1,000 widgets to sell, or, you know, 5,000 cookies to sell. You probably have 5 dozen at the most. So you can easily tailor what you're doing. And these cookies sold well, the chocolate chips sold well, but nobody was into the oatmeal raisin. Okay, you can easily adapt that for the next market or the next venue you're at. And that's what I always have to smile about the cottage food side too, is, geez, there's really no waste, because, okay, if you didn't sell those oatmeal raisins, you just can just eat them yourselves. You know, there's nothing going to waste at all. So it you can really maneuver and be an entrepreneurial ninja, if you will, much better in the cottage food playing arena than just about any other business opportunity.
I love when you're talking about mindset and shifting the way you think about what you're doing to a business mindset. Do you have any examples of how either you have done that or seen people do that and start to think about their business in a new way?
Sure. There's a bunch of different case studies we write about in the Homemade for Sale book. And Felicia Hill is a good example out of Washington State. She didn't have plans to be a business entrepreneur or a professional cake baker, but as a lot of parents can probably relate to, she had a son with a allergy, with a peanut allergy, and she couldn't find a bakery that was nut-free that could make a fun cake, you know, at a younger age when you want things with characters and colors and fun stuff. So as any good mom did, she learned how to make cakes, and she not only made his birthday cake, but she found that she liked it, and she was making cakes for friends and started hearing from folks. And this is a really good question to keep your ear out if you are an entrepreneur wannabe in the cottage food realm. Is there anything you're giving away free to your friends that they say, gee, you should sell this? Well, that's exactly what happened to her with her cakes. And that got her thinking, and that got her researching and actually involved with the passage of the cottage food legislation in Washington. And now she's advocating for increasing the gross sales cap in Washington because her sales have increased to that point. So there's a lot of different entry portals to that entrepreneurship side. But here's a case of somebody who, again, didn't even really have an intent, but serendipitously got involved with the cake decorating side, found that she was both good at it and enjoyed it, and then shifted to, all right, how can I be a professional cake baker?
Yeah, Felicia is a great story. So what about for someone who's aspiring, thinking about it, wants to go forward, and maybe they don't have people asking them to make a certain thing, but they want to step into their own realm. What should they do this week? What should they do next week? What are some immediate steps that someone can take to get going in the cottage food space?
Sure. Well, probably a first step would be a good research trip to your local farmers market. That's the easiest entry point for most cottage food entrepreneurs because it's an existing venue where people, customers come and they want to buy food. So it's a good way to test the market. But by scouting out some farmers markets in your area, you can start getting a feel of what's being sold, what do you see some potential gaps for, and start mulling on the marketing side and then blend that with what it is that you like to make and can make well. And that's a real important question. It doesn't really matter what there's a market for if it's something that you don't A, produce well, and B, I would argue, enjoy making. I'm somebody, for example, who likes to can and likes to do our sauerkraut. We do pickles in Wisconsin. Under our current law, we can do high acid foods. But I'm not a very good jam maker. I just don't click as well. Or I don't know, I'm eating all those strawberries fresh out of the garden. So, okay, fine. I'm focusing on the things that I can do well. And in this case, there's a lot of strawberry jam already at the market, but there's not a lot of sauerkraut. There's not a lot of pickled pumpkin or some of the more unique pickled items that I do. So it's looking at that. And then again, as we were talking about, David, of testing things on a small batch. The first time I made the pickled pumpkin, I didn't make 50 jars of it. I made 12 and I took them to our winter market and gosh, they sold out. So I made more. And this summer we planted more pumpkins. So it's a way that you can try things out with not a whole lot of time and effort. And that's the fun part about cottage food businesses. And if you go to the market, you'll easily see this. It's a really collaborative group of people because we all are in our own way and collectively pioneers in this new movement. Part of what motivated John and I to write Homemade for Sale is the majority of time, and I'm sure you see this with folks on Forager, when you tell somebody, hey, did you know that you could start this cookie business in your home kitchen? People say, I didn't know that, or I thought that was illegal, or tell me more. So cottage food entrepreneurs as a community, we all are learning this as we go. And it's a real collaborative community effort when you're at the market, because usually you're pretty good. I can identify cottage food businesses because I know what the label looks like, you know, or I know how they need to package something. And I find that by approaching folks really honestly and openly, you get a lot of great questions answered and can talk to folks who are already doing it and learn from their experiences as well.
Let's say a cottage food operation's already going, they're already selling things at a farmer's market, they're already doing a little bit of that starting small, but they want to grow their business and they like to take it to the next level. What are some things that you see people doing that they could be doing better, or maybe things that they're not doing that they should be doing? What do you advise to cottage food operations around the country?
Sure. Well, it's two questions to ask yourself. And the first is more philosophical in that how much do you want to grow in your home space? And that will vary a lot based on what your home space is, how big it is. Despite the fact that, what is it, over 20 states now have no gross sales cap for cottage food businesses, how much do you want this business to invade your home space? And when does it start becoming an issue of balance between your business life and your professional life and your family life? And when is it taking over your whole house? That's a question to really keep in mind, because eventually, if things grow continually, you'll need to ask yourself that. You know, am I ready to move into a commercial kitchen? Do I need a second place to produce my product? You know, is my gross sales going to exceed the gross sales cap for my state, et cetera? And that's what I love about the success stories of people who've started in the cottage food arena and have grown out of it. And hands down, everyone I've talked to, we've interviewed for the book, who has gone that route, says, I wouldn't be able to be in the successful shoes I am today without cottage food law. There's a woman in the book, Dorothy Stainbrook. She's an organic berry farmer out of Minnesota who started making some jams and jellies under Minnesota's cottage food law, selling them at market. And she's also a bartender. So she was making some fun jams and using some Merlots and some different liqueur flavorings. So they were unique product. And she exceeded the gross sales cap. She ended up building an on-farm kitchen and investing in that. But again, by that time, she had marketing and traction and has, for the last couple of years, won some of the Good Food Awards, that big Grand Poobah Award for food artisans, because her product's so good. But again, she'd be first to say, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for cottage food. So that's a route that some entrepreneurs want to take and focus on and can wonderfully succeed on. But for most of us who keep things small, the second part of the question would be, well, how can you creatively grow your sales? One thing to think about is, how can you pre-sale if that's allowed in your state? How can you know where your product's going? So are there venues that need a lot of something and can place a larger order? So weddings, for example, are a good venue for a lot of folks who do anything from, well, cakes, obviously, but even the favor realm and doing customized sugar cookies individually wrapped or small jars of jam personalized for the wedding. It's a whole lot easier to know you have an order for 100, 200 of something per unit price than bringing those to the market and hoping you might sell them. So the more you are able to know your sales ahead of time and particularly grow venues like weddings, parties, sometimes corporations that need something every week or they're doing gift baskets or something more regular, that really helps the business grow as well.
So what about you? What's an example? I mean, are you feeling like you're moving in the direction you want to be moving in? Do you want to be doing more with cottage food? What are your plans for the future?
Sure. Well, my goals are probably twofold. First, like you, is really growing the movement, period, nationally, and helping folks get started and championing resources and support so that we can grow as a community and we can really grow as an economic indicator in our country. Personally, the reason I first connected with cottage food law was back in 2010, we call it affectionately our pickle bill passed in Wisconsin, but that allows high acid foods to be sold at public venues like farmers markets. That's the safer canned items, the pickles, jams, jellies, salsas, my sauerkraut, that sort of thing. And I said, that's great. I'm happy to hear about this and learn about cottage food. But I immediately asked, well, why can't I sell my muffins? That you can come to our bed and breakfast and I can serve you muffins, but I can't sell you those same muffins. That seemed to disconnect. So that got me involved here in Wisconsin with attempting to get our cottage food legislation expanded to include baked goods and to also include direct sales, which is an important component that, again, most states have, where if you want to buy my muffins from me, we can do that as a direct sale. I don't have to bring them only to a public venue like a farmer's market and hope I sell them. So as with other states can relate to, of just politics and clunky bureaucracy, we're still working on getting that passed. But that's another strong passion of mine to see things expanded here in my home state of Wisconsin.
That's kind of ridiculous, but I'm glad that you're on the front lines and helping out Wisconsin and trying to move things forward. I know it's a long battle, but I appreciate everything you're doing to help the cottage food movement there.
Well, that's what gets me so jazzed, David, too, is really just about every state, when their laws initially passed and when they expand, they're because of people like us. They're because of constituents calling up their representative and saying, hey, could we do something like this? How can I help? Hey, great to see our cottage food law, but you know what? I think we need to include more products, or we need to include a higher gross sales cap or more sales outlets. But it's a true grassroots democracy at its finest. And it's connecting, in this case, you know, many home bakers, many home kitchen folks to the legislative process in ways that we would have not otherwise. But it is very rewarding to see your voice being heard and to create a law that not only impacts yourself, but really champions entrepreneurs across your state and collectively across the country.
Yeah, well, I look forward to the day when, and I know it'll come, when you help that law get passed and people can start selling baked goods in your state. So,
oh, we'll have a party. You'll be first to know.
Yeah, keep at it. Well, before we wrap things up, could you just describe your book a little bit, Homemade for Sale, and why you wrote it and what it's about?
Sure. So John and I wrote Homemade for Sale. Really, it serves as the first authoritative book on cottage food startups, because as we work to expand legislation here in Wisconsin and we looked beyond our borders around the country, this is such an untapped opportunity for folks. Most cottage food laws have passed since the Great Recession in 2008. And as we were talking about, most folks still say, you mean I could do that? That's legal. So yes. So to help folks move from the hobby baker or the home kitchen enthusiast to business person, that's what the book goes into. It goes into anything from how to navigate your state law to the marketing side, to setting up your kitchen, to setting up the accounting side of your business, as well as what to do next. There's a whole chapter on scaling up and what do you do when that jam really takes off, or you've got the absolute perfect cookie recipe that you could see Starbucks serving eventually. What are some options there? Which again, there's a lot more of those as well too now with incubator kitchens and commercial kitchens you can rent. So it's really a one-stop shop on all the specifics and to really help champion this movement, because the more we can help folks empower themselves economically from a business perspective, hey, that's Homeland Security at its finest to me. That really is creating a nation of cottage food entrepreneurs like we used to be in generations past, where we were self-sufficient in our families and we were importantly selling to our communities and neighbors and really increasing our local economies. So by all of these individuals starting our own business, we will collectively be a lot stronger as a country.
Well, that's fantastic. And I can tell you that I think it's a great book, and I'm so happy that you wrote it, and I would recommend it to anyone if they haven't already picked it up. I'll include a link to that on this video page so that people can find it and buy it. And there are also some excerpts that you've been kind enough to post on Forager that allow people to see some of the content that's in the book without having to buy it. Well, thanks so much for talking with me today, and I appreciate everything that you're doing.
Oh, thank you for growing Forager. It's like we're talking about a real collaborative effort between everybody around the country. It's going to change things in a fundamental way, and I'm looking forward to the tasty things to come.
Well, thanks a lot. We'll close things up now. I just spoke with Lisa Kivirist, who, along with her husband, John Ivankoe, have done so much for the cottage food industry and really the food industry as a whole in the United States. Today, Lisa talked about how she's moved from a corporate lifestyle to an on-farm lifestyle, and she's also shared some of the steps needed to turn a food product into a business. Again, this is David Crable from Forager, and thanks for listening.